That is what I was thinking.
Thinking.
Thinking. Yes.
I like to
thinking.
Think.
And thinking is part of learning. Learning Hub's online communities. Oh, look at that awful transition because
wow,
I've just woken up.
that was a transition. That was not a good one. Yeah, so today's episode, we're kind of diving into a conversation around Learning Hub's online communities, studying. Haha, spoilers. And like what that means for us and how we learn things, how we be part of online communities, and like just discussions around that lovely kind of topic.
And I think this is pertinent to this conversation specifically between us two, because you're in business, I'm in academics and traditional formal education, be it school, college, university, whatever words you want to put in there, nursery as well. There is a curriculum to it. There is a certain way you're expected to learn throughout school, and neurodivergent individuals typically struggle in those environments. And when you look at some of the work, you're waving. And when you look at some of the work in pedagogy, in education, in learning, from my academic background, school isn't necessarily the best way to do it, which is where online communities, online courses, learning hubs, and things like that in recent years have suddenly gone, oh, actually, all those people that struggle that way could do it this way. But there isn't necessarily a better or worse. I think they are different ways of doing the same thing. Let's expand on that.
It's like when it comes to business as well, a lot of what we learn. So you have obviously the business degrees, but the vast majority of entrepreneurs do not take business degrees. And often those business degrees don't do as much as you'd think. And it's kind of like, now I've never learned to drive, but this is what it's been described to me. But it's like when you learn to drive, you learn how to pass your test. And then after you finish, you learn how to drive. And I think from my perspective, that's what the taking a degree is for business in particular, and then actually running a business. And it's also the fact that I think we can expand this to be a little bit like qualifications as well, because I was looking into doing a coaching qualification, and then I took a course on... Why are you laughing? I mean, are you surprised? Really? Come on.
No, so I'm laughing. I tried to stay quiet. I'm laughing because what you've just said there is the exact reason I didn't take the Notion certification.
Oh, now I'm intrigued. Because, of course, I am, for context, if you don't already know, I'm certified, he's not.
Uh-huh.
Do go.
So, I mean, studying, education, learning, formal education, like you were saying, is... it can be very exam focused. So I do drive, and it's very, very much down to the teacher, the practitioner, the lecturer, whatever, as to what the student gets out of it a lot of the time. But because of the way education has been molded, the qualification comes first. So the teachers in schools, we need to get you to pass at this grade so that you can move on, or I need to get this percentage of people passing so I don't lose my job. So the exam, the test becomes needed. And with driving,
it's almost like the test is more on the teacher rather than the pupil.
Exactly. And driving is the same, because the instructor needs to get the person to pass the test. But just because they pass the test doesn't mean they can drive. My dad, for those that are unaware, is a driving examiner. So he actually tests people to drive. And if they can't, he says, sorry, you failed. So I at school, it was great fun. Oh, your dad took me for my test and he failed me. No, he didn't fail you. You can't drive. There's a difference. but the instructors were teaching the people how to pass the test. But if the test route wasn't taken and they came up to a turning that, I don't know, maybe it was a roundabout with five exits, but one of the exits was really small and it isn't classed as an exit. You have to figure it out for yourself. And they fail because they indicated or cut someone up or whatever. That is, they've been taught how to pass the test, not how to drive. And for me, when looking at the Notion certification, it was okay, you can answer these questions or you can tick these boxes, but not necessarily know how to help someone else do this thing or how you can figure out a problem if it does come up, or if an update comes out in Notion and you haven't been asked a question about it, you can figure it out yourself how it works.
Yeah, I think that I kind of second that as someone who is certified. It is very much a tick boxes, and it's with Notion in particular, it's really hard to know you're good at something. I've had experiences where people have come to me and go, well, I'm pretty experienced in Notion. I know my way around. I could work this out, figure that out. And so I come in with I used to come in before I kind of got used to this, with a thought of like, okay, well, they're experienced and they know what a roll up is. They know what, they know this, they know that. I can go talk about kind of advanced formulas. I introduce a formula to them, I introduce flipping relation, and they're like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. Yeah, you're an advanced, you said you, right, okay, I'm going to have to rethink everything now and start from scratch. So now whenever I hear someone say, I'm an advanced Notion user, or I'm an intermediate Notion user, unless I know them from the community, I assume that they are not.
Yeah.
Because there is no... going back to the conversation that I had, is like there is no standardized test. You cannot standardize Notion. I mean, people have tried. Certain people have tried. But the problem is that Notion, in its infinite flexibility, it is really hard. It is not necessarily just a skills test. It's about how you perceive the person you're supporting and guiding and helping, which is why I launched my mastermind for Notion users, for like people who want to become, who want to build a business in Notion. And the thing is that if you don't understand how to coach your clients, how to consult with a client, how to, in some respects, read their darn minds, because often sometimes they do expect you to read their minds, or predict what's happening or what they need in advance.
That's just human communication.
Exactly. And if you can't communicate, if you cannot communicate clearly.
Just like you.
Yeah, like I know, right? you can't be a Notion consultant. Like, and unfortunately, the test itself, although when I did it last, which is kind of very early on, like some of it did cover that, but there's a lot missing in the certification. And it is a namesake. It is a namesake.
So there's a couple of things I want to sort of say. One of them is an example from one of the sports that I used to compete in, slowly getting back into, but because of my eyesight, it's going to be challenging, trampoline. Because if you can't see the trampoline, you know, it could fall off. But a lot of people have trampolines in their gardens. I trampoline. Trampolining in a garden trampoline is completely different to a competitive trampoline. They are called different names. They are way bouncier for the Olympic trampolines. And as soon as you get someone in and you ask them, have you trampolined before? If they say yes, you say, okay, what sort of skill can you do? And the immediate red flag for anyone inside the competitive trampoline world is if someone says, I can flip. What that means to people from trampoline is, okay, you've done a front flip on a garden trampoline, and most likely you went from the back of the trampoline to the front of the trampoline, smacking your head down. Biomechanically, that means you're moving forwards. You do that on a bouncy trampoline, you fall off. Not good, not safe. So there's a mental check that everyone new into a club or an environment is, where you go, okay, where are you at? We do the basic skills and find out roughly where they're at in comparison with sort of elite trampolinists, that the people from the Olympics. And when you look at education, it's the same sort of thing. You need some way to pre-test as to where someone is before you can really get an understanding of where they actually are, because what they don't know, they don't know. So obviously, so if they don't know what the best is, i.e. Olympic standard or gold standard, wherever that is, they can't really know how good they are. So asking that question is, in my opinion, redundant. how good do you think you are? Well, I'm amazing because I know everything I know, but it's loads of stuff you don't know. And moving forwards with that, with qualifications, I'm speaking particularly in sports coaching, is you don't lose it. in a lot of qualifications, you can't lose your degree. You can't lose a master's or a PhD. You've done it. You can't lose a coaching degree. So a coaching qualification, if you're a level 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, you can't lose it. So you have 80-year-old men that passed their level 1 coaching qualification 60 years ago and haven't done any CPD, coach professional development. So they haven't updated themselves at all, still coaching 7-year-olds. Insert all of the issues with most of sport with adults and children and the inappropriate nature, because they haven't done any updated courses, because they don't lose the qualification. They can't regress. And the same thing, I think, is happening in online education. People have, I did a PhD. And then they go and educate about something that isn't related to their PhD or their studies, but they still have a PhD. So it's potentially a false labeling, but the lack of regression of qualifications in formal education makes trusting a source difficult unless they actually source themselves, which is a recent rant I've had on Twitter.
I think this
references, happens. Please.
Ever.
References, so I can fact check.
I know.
Just because you say studies says doesn't mean studies actually say. Where's the references?
Oh, yeah, I saw that rant and it was very funny because I was just like, yeah. And also, just because studies say doesn't mean everybody says. Doesn't mean it's a tiny, tiny subsection of the whole entire world of different cultures and ethnicities, and it's almost impossible for you to capture everybody, many types of neurodiversities. Like, you haven't captured, it's so...
small sample size.
Yeah, it's always a small sample size. Even a big sample size is still a small sample size.
A big sample size in most scientific papers is like 100 plus. You look at how many millions of people are in the world. Well,
and
billions.
Often you have, if you start adding in biases as well, then it just gets messy.
Oh, yeah. And that's why meta-analysis are needed. That's why there's a whole field of research around something, not just one or two papers, which is where the Bayesian brain hypothesis comes in, where you use new information to update prior beliefs. And that's a whole thing on how learning works and pedagogy and stuff. But bringing it back to learning hubs and online communities, that's where you can use other people to help update your prior beliefs or help update yourself, which is why I think online communities is kind of like a second, because a lot of people need some syllabus or some guideline in a way to move forwards to learn something. Because if you just say to a new person, okay, learn about this thing, they don't have a roadmap or anything. It's just, okay, where do I go? Where do I start? Kind of like when you take someone into Notion, where do I start? And having a formal education, a guideline, doesn't have to be a certificate at the end, just a guideline to get somewhere, get them started, get the ball rolling so they ask questions, and then online communities helping them move in the direction they want to go. That's where I see learning hubs and online communities, but yeah, that's me.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do agree with what you're saying, but I think there's a risk to overly standardizing something. It's like, you've got to have that balance between giving someone an introduction rather than like a curriculum. It's like, here's the things you have to know. I mean, I am one to completely, absolutely skip most of the intro stuff because it's boring.
Yep.
And so for me, like a good example of this is recently. So I have never done a standardized qualification in coaching. I mean, it's unregulated as hell anyway, so it's fine. It's unregulated and needs a lot of work. But I did a recently, I took a kind of 4-day interactive workshop course / thing, which is designed for advanced coaches. But I took it because I was interested. Okay, fine. Advanced coaches.
Yeah.
Advanced coaches.
Is that what it was titled?
No. Oh, no, it wasn't. Okay. It wasn't titled that. But it was kind of designed for people who have at least some coaching experience. Now, of course, I have no professional coaching experience, but I've been consulting and coaching in Notion for years. So
I was going to say, I think... probably our meanings behind professional are slightly different, but the fact you're being paid for something means you must have had some professional experience.
Yeah, I think it's professional experience versus coaching experience. And of course, because I've coached in business, it's slightly different as well, and blah, 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 blah.
Different context.
And yeah, it is. It is always a different context, and context is key. And it was fascinating. So, like, you've not done any formal qualification, but you're already doing things in the way that they teach. And there was a fascinating conversation around it. It's like, so the thing that I did was a Gestalt workshop, and like using Gestalt in kind of business and coaching and consulting. And the ICF, the International Coaching Federation, do not see Gestalt interventions as quote unquote correct, because in Gestalt you bring yourself into the conversation as the coach, instead of it being just like, you are coach, you are person, I teach you. It's coming together, it's the connection of people, and it's not seen as correct in both the kind of the initial qualification and then the middle qualification. It's only seen in kind of like the continuing coaches education, because people have to learn how to not tell people what to do in coaching if you do coaching. And that brings a whole conversation on what consulting, coaching and mentoring is, that brings that whole story.
You can add teacher, leader, manager, all in there as well. I mean, my experience in the professional coaching world is obviously in sport, which ICF has practically nothing to do with, because it's all NGBs, national governing bodies of sport. So the ICF, I've read through some of their curricula, and it's, I'm not a fan of some of it, to be political.
No, me neither. I was going to take one, and now I'm not even... When I actually spoke to someone in there, like the group that I was with, one of them actually is part of it and actually is one of, actually runs a course in London around kind of getting your qualification on that. They're certified. And they were like, why doesn't this make sense? Because you'd need to learn this first. It's like, but, but if the point, like for me, from my perspective, it's like, the point of consulting and coaching is to support your client to reach their results in any way possible that works for them. That's everything that I do. If I can help someone get somewhere, I will find out how to do it, and I will do it. That's just how I work. And so the idea that knowing how, frankly, I hate the word, but transformational, and how it can, I saw her face, this is beautiful. Yeah, I know. I felt it too. But how valuable a Gestalt intervention is to so many different perspectives, like in work. And I've started using it in my Notion consulting, in all of my work. And it's amazing how people respond so well, because you're building a connection, you're building rapport with the person, with the coach you're talking to. Like it's, and you don't feel like you're being told how to work. You're having a conversation, and it helps the coachee figure it out in a way that works for them. It gives them agency. It gives them the ability to think for themselves, which is exactly what sucks in business. And I'm talking business specifically, where just basically everybody tells you what you should do. Instead, it's giving agency and discernment to your coachee to go, no, that's not quite how I think, but I think like this instead. And it gives that, but that is not something you should be doing until you reach advanced level, according to ICF. When quite frankly, I feel that should be freaking standard.
Tell me about it. I could preach on this rock like for hours and hours and hours. 5 years of education of me just hammer at home. But I think with the way syllabus work now, it's very much a step-by-step. How I personally see syllabus, and how I saw it during my master's degree, which some of my lecturers didn't appreciate, was they were the syllabus, the lectures were basically choices of mine. Am I interested in this subject, this topic? If I am, I'll have a look at it in my own time. If I'm not, I don't care. So I would turn up to the lecture, and sometimes I've done more research than the lecturer. So when they're talking about stuff, I'm like, yeah, but what about this? I don't know. What about this? I don't know. Like, okay, what's the point of this lecture? And then you've got the other side where it's something that's I'm not interested in the slightest, and they're talking about it, and I'm sitting there twiddling my thumbs, staring out the window. Danny, you need to pay attention. Why? I don't care. And that's how I see syllabus for me with online. So when I'm looking at courses that I'm not going to take, but I'm interested in the area, I'll have a look at the syllabus and have a look at the area. So I'll research the area and find some of the typical questions, and then that will be my trigger to go learn. And then I will use the learning hubs, the online communities, and the other people that are interested in that topic to then further that knowledge. So I don't need a coach per se, because I have people that are one page in front of me. I love that analogy. Just be one page in front of someone else, because essentially that's what most people want, because of the expertise reversal effect. If you've got someone that's too far ahead, they'll be given instruction that's just way over the learner's head. They can't imagine it. They can't visualize it. Cognitive load is too high. So I don't know, zone out, which is just what happens at universities a lot, because lecturers and PhDs have been researching this thing for 10, 15, 20 years. They start saying big words and students go, I don't know, zone out. I'm going to play on my phone instead.
Yeah, and it's just something that I've been noticing as I've been, it's like I noticed this really clearly when I first moved. So in the productivity space, we have all these absolute hyper nerds who are learning about performance and peak performance and all that stuff. And then you move into business and start talking about that to business owners who actually need all this stuff. And I made a tweet a long time ago, like, they don't care. They don't care about circadian rhythms. They don't give a shit about this, that, even though they should, even though they need to know this information, even though they should know this information because it's helping them to make better decisions. They don't care. They just want it explained to them in a way that is like, hey, this will help you. This is it. This will mean you can do this. Listen, make it mean something. Bring meaning to what is being said. Like, it's got to matter.
And I mean, one of the bullet points we've got down there is YouTube. And YouTube, obviously, I'm biased towards it because I create stuff on YouTube.
I have some lovely questions for you, because this is where you and I are exactly the opposite. You will go and publicly learn stuff. You will research, find, and get all the details and spend all the time. Me, I don't have that luxury. I have two children and a business that has lots of people. That need me. And I think it's interesting. As I am kind of, for context, I have paid a lot of money on courses. Worked it out recently. It was about $17,000 on courses. Guess what tool I used to figure that out? Notion. I think we're nearing on $17,000. You're right there, Danny.
That's 2 years at university.
Yeah, I know. On a variety of different subjects.
But I know you haven't completed or even started some of those courses.
Shut your face.
It's like paying for a book and then leaving it in the bookshelf.
Yeah, no, I do that too. No,
no, my bookshelf's full of DVDs. I'm not even joking. My bookshelf is full of DVDs. It's got like 5 books in it.
And so I'm really intrigued at, for you, like, let's start with me. For me, courses are shortcuts. They allow me to get most of the time decent snippets of information, like jumping off points. They're kind of like that starting point that you were talking about earlier with, like, when you're first getting started. I'm happy to pay a good solid amount of money to get a starting point, a jumping off point on things. I bought the Rome Research course by Nat Eliason before he's moved to Obsidian. That's so funny. And I bought a Notion course right at the start to figure things out, to give me a head start in getting moving. You do the exact opposite of that. You go deep from the beginning.
I don't go deep from the beginning. It's So the way I treat YouTube for learning is YouTube is a great platform to get a variety of different opinions on a topic. You can type in anything on YouTube, and depending on how popular the topic is going to change what results come up. If you type in sleep deprivation, Matthew Walker and his book is going to appear basically everywhere because it's just popular. And I see you laughing because I'm not a fan of the book.
Are you not? I've never heard you say that before.
Every
single conversation.
I'm not a fan of the book. Well, the points in the book and the habits and protocols that he suggests are useful, but the facts and the science behind it is poorly explained. Go look at one of my videos, go look at a video on it, and then have a look at my Obsidian publish if you're curious. But YouTube for me is a way to experience the top end of the funnel, basically, of something. There are some resources that are very deep. So Andrew Huberman's podcast is an example. It's, let's talk for 2 hours about this thing, really specific, referencing a few papers. And then we're going to do another three related to similar topics. That's like a heavy course, basically, through podcasts. So the way I see YouTube, for me anyway, is shorter videos to give me sort of different insights, kind of like an abstract, a paper's abstract about a topic or an area. And then I will use longer videos or podcasts, kind of like the two, as my next step. So top of the funnel is YouTube or Twitter, but normally YouTube, to give me an abstract idea of, this is an interesting topic. I want to ask some more questions about it. If I want to know more, I'll then watch a longer video, which is either a lecture or a podcast in video format or something like that.
Define longer video.
It depends what the video was before. So if the first video I saw on the topic was like a 2 minute like tip trick thing, the longer video would be a 10 minute video. And then that video, most of the time, will go into three or four points. Each of those points will have a video in themselves. So they will still be like, if they're 10 minute videos on one small point, it's just an overarching thing. Whereas if you've got a 10 minute video on one point, but they've still breezed over a lot of things and they need a longer video, it may be an hour to explain this one thing. So it's very dependent on what they're trying to explain. If they're trying to explain sleep deprivation, for example, that could be done in like 2 minutes. Or it could be done in like 10 hours.
As you know.
yes. For me, a longer video is anything longer than 20 minutes. Most of the time, those videos are 40 minutes to 2 hours. And then podcasts are the same sort of thing. Like, I don't listen to podcasts that are shorter than 40 minutes. I think the only one is Seth Godin's one, but that's just I'm going to fill in the gaps. Oh, Jim Quick is also kind of short, but I don't really listen to his podcast because the podcast is a snippet of the videos on YouTube and the video on YouTube is actually the full conversation. Why would I want part of a conversation? Anyway, and then once I've done that, I will then dive into the research because for me, there's no point me looking at academic research and getting fully confused with jargon and lingo and the rest of the methods and results and the rest of it if I'm not that interested in the topic in the first place. And if I can get a summary, and most of the time the trustworthy sources I use reference papers anyway, so they're academics, so they've looked at some of the research and they're using that in their conversation. So it's more of a me using the papers to fact check what's going on and to me to be curious about something that's going on. And I saw you laughing, I just chose to ignore it.
And I love how you didn't ignore it in the end.
Well, I did ignore it. And then I was like, I'm just going to comment about it because I feel rude not commenting about it.
Sure, makes sense. Okay, so yeah, and it's really interesting. I think having the synthesis of information and like just really quick. I prefer courses on tactical things. I think that's where my brain has gone now. It's like, if it's something that I can learn and I need to learn step by step how to do it from start to finish, I'd rather have a course. If it's something a little bit more, I wouldn't say esoteric because I hate that word. It's
annoying. Conceptual.
Yeah, conceptual. I would prefer to have a mastermind. I would prefer to have like a one-to-one conversation with a person and then interlink that with multiple people, because then you have that kind of group groupthink and kind of everything kind of comes together in a way that works and makes perfect sense and feels good in your little area of the world. I think we're talking about learning and online communities and courses and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on like the cohort based courses? I'm intrigued to get your information, like your thoughts from a perception of someone who never buys courses.
So I'm gonna preface this by saying I've never done one, so I'm gonna be biased. Obviously, we're always going to be biased, but I've never done one. And the reason I've never done one is when I look at the information in the courses from what everyone speaks about in the courses that I do follow, building a second brain being one of those, I look at the information, I look at what people talk about, and I look at what's freely online. Building a second brain, there is almost no information that is said in the course that I can't find freely online. So the course content itself is available everywhere, which I think is consistent with most courses.
Yeah.
I don't think there is going to be information in a course that you can't find somewhere else. It's just a case of finding the information. And that is the barrier for most people. They don't want to go and find it. They just want to be given it, which is fine. It's up to them. I want to go and find it because I'm more likely to remember it, the way learning works, and you're more likely to then explore it rather than just being told it. It's very similar to what Veritasium, so Derek Muller, did with his PhD. Misconceptions and misunderstanding in education triggers thought, triggers thinking. If you're told something, you just go, yes, that's what I thought, but you didn't think it, it sounds right and you just believe it.
That's interesting. See, for me, I take a course and I'm sat there hypercritical the entire time. Which I know is a slight contradiction to what I said. And the reason why I bought a course is to learn something quickly. But then I think that that's where you and I are kind of, that I want a quick download from someone who's already done it. And if they're shit, then I won't listen to it anymore. I won't continue the course.
But how do you know the shit if you don't know it to start with? What metric are you saying in your head? This guy doesn't know what they're talking about, or this girl doesn't know what they're talking about. I'm going to go elsewhere. If you don't know something to start with.
That's a very good question, which I don't have a good answer to.
It's
a sense. It's like, okay, this person's, I normally have done a little bit of research and understanding before I begin, but I don't take I don't think I necessarily take a course to learn something. I take it to, as we're talking about it more, I'm realizing it's less about learning a thing and more about learning a perspective on a thing. Because business is perspective. Like, how to run a business is incredibly perspective. It's only what you know. And that is literally it.
Mm-hmm. And that's the other part of the cohort-based courses. So the actual content itself, the information itself, isn't subject just to that course. It's the perspective. But if it's the perspective of the creator, most of the time the creator is doing other free stuff somewhere to promote the course. That's how marketing works. And the majority of the time, if you go deep in the depth of someone's work, whether that's a blog post that they never actually promote, a lot of people that have courses have a blog post and they'll talk about most of the stuff in the course in old blog posts, because that's how they make the course. They make the course from proven work they've done in the past. So you go back a couple of pages on a blog, or a couple of scrolls down their YouTube channel, or a couple of scrolls down their Twitter feed, and you'll find out most of the information that they talk about in the course. So then it becomes about the conversations. And that's where online communities happen, because most courses have online communities talking about the information on Twitter, social media, in a group, in a Discord, somewhere. So all the stuff you would get in a course, you can find online if you know where to go and you have the time to find those places. And because I prefer to spend a little bit of time and do my own research and find the conversations I want to engage in rather than pay money to be told what to learn, that's just my preference.
Yeah, and I think this is a matter of, like, I hate the word privilege because it's overused, but it's like you have the capacity to do so. Like, you personally can spend that time. If I could spend that time, I absolutely agree with you. I wouldn't take a course. I would spend all my time figuring it out and just researching and doing the same thing as you. But I think that this is where we differ, in the fact that like, I won't say you don't run a business, because YouTube is a business, to be fair. So, and you do have clients and stuff. But, like, I think the perspectives, like, how we come at learning is slightly different.
It should be. We are different people. And I also want to add on to there, because I don't know who's listening. I have the time to learn. You have the money to support you learning. Some people have neither. Some people don't have the time or the money, and they are just full doing something, whether that's caring for someone else, or they just don't have the time because of life. Maybe, I mean, everyone listening to this is going to have some way to access the internet because it's a podcast. But I went to Uganda when I was at school. I did a two-week community work sort of project out there. We were building houses. We were teaching kids. And the kids that I were teaching, I was teaching them basic English. This is a cat. This is a dog. And they were the best students I have ever taught and probably will ever teach, because they have no access to anything. It's a Kabubu. It's a small village in Uganda. And they, some of the kids, like 7, 8 years old, are walking 10, 15 miles to get to a school. And they, as soon as they sit down, that's it. They want to ask all the questions. That's how they want to learn. They just want everything, all the information. And it's just a different way, because they haven't been subject to, you need to go to school, you need to learn A, B, C, D to get to next year or whatever. It's a completely different mindset of learning. And when thinking about multiple intelligences, the work by, I can't remember his name. I've got his book over there. I've read like the first half of the book.
Wow, what book is that?
I know,
multiple intelligences. You read a book?
Howard Gardner. There we go. That's the person's name. Yeah, Howard Gardner, Multiple Intelligences. And he said, it's kind of like a pre-worker for the neurodiversity field, basically saying that some of us prefer certain types of knowledge and intelligence because that's the way our brain works due to environments, genetics, whether it's genes or environments. We can argue about that another time. But everyone learns differently, which is why I think we need multiple environments and multiple communities, which is where online communities, learning hubs, courses, I think need to work together rather than against each other. And that's just a pet peeve of mine with this learning education industry. It's kind of like universities versus cohort based courses versus online communities versus free education. No, why is it versus? Why are we competing? We should be working together.
I mean, this is the, well, that's because human beings are naturally competitive and they want to feel part of a thing and then they like to cause conflict so that it makes them feel better. And we all know why. This is, you know, we all know why.
Ego.
It's ego and marketing.
Yeah.
It's why the whole Notion versus Obsidian. It's like, I hope that for us, we have transitioned really well out of that. I teased you when you first moved to Obsidian.
Yeah.
And but it was us messing around, because truthfully, I couldn't give a shit what app you use. If it works, it works, and that's where I've landed forever. And it, I just, yeah. Notion versus app, ClickUp versus app, yeah. This versus that. It's
a never-ending comparison, because it's the way marketing, and unfortunately it always comes down to money. Always. I need money to live, so I'm going to compete with someone else to earn more money, because I'm going to sell more products or whatever they happen to be. And for me, this is why I'm going to say Sci-Hub. Sci-Hub is the best thing that's happened to education since like ever, since technology existed, because Sci-Hub, for those who are unaware, basically takes away the pay barrier to academic papers. And academic papers are the forefront of education. It's the forefront of research in most areas. Practitioners obviously have the experience, but theory is in academic papers, and it's so expensive. I'm not paying £30 for 8 pages of paper and 4 of those pages are references. That's not happening.
Disclaimer, no, we cannot put the link in. I don't fancy being taken down. Thank you very much. We're going to not have the link. Just look it up. Google it.
Yeah. I got a video on it.
Have you really?
Well, the research rabbit, I talk about Sci-Hub at the end of the research rabbit. There is also a video by Medlife Crisis, and he speaks with the creator of Sci-Hub and talks with academic journals about it, because, I mean, I don't want to steal the essence of the video, but basically academic journals have an extremely good return on investment for papers. And it is a business. Academic papers and articles is a business, but education is being controlled by money. Schools controlled by money. Teachers need to be paid, so they teach kids certain things so they can pass the curriculum. Universities need to have a certain amount of students, so they lower their boundaries to get in because they need to pay the bills. So students that shouldn't be getting degrees are getting degrees because degrees are getting easier because they can't, universities can't afford to have a student in for longer. So people are getting degrees, which is why undergraduate degrees are literally nothing now. I have a degree. Great. Is it a PhD? No, doesn't matter. Like, having a master's degree is just almost expected in so many fields. If you don't have a master's degree going into strength and conditioning, good luck. Good luck. And PhDs now, you're like, oh, you got a PhD? What was that in? Oh, okay, yeah, our research is a little bit further. Could you do a PhD in that instead? No. No. And I mean, 9 times out of 10, anyone writing a book has got a PhD in something now. But yeah, so and that's how money influences education and learning, which is, it's doing it on online communities as well. You can pay to learn this thing that's also free online. Why would I pay for it? For the convenience, I know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Which takes us nicely onto our little segment at the end where we meaning behind the word, or our personal meaning behind the word.
Yeah, that's better. So today's word is, as if we plan this, studying. And for context, this was really difficult because I wanted to give other words and explain those. Now, I started last time. You can start this time.
Yeah, I want to preface this and say kind of like a, I don't know whether it's not a rule, just a guideline. When we're using other words to describe the meaning of a word, I don't think we should go explain the meaning of that because then we'll just go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, so. I was trying not to take the word and then describe another word. And then I'm just like, fuck's sake.
Yeah, because there's going to be a lot of overlap, but there's always a lot of overlap because that's the way language has been built. So my first point, I really struggled categorizing these, like really struggled.
Yeah, I haven't. I've just put them down and I'm like, I'll touch on each one as I go.
Well, last time you had like 5 points. They were all kind of the same sort of thing. There were like small differences. So my first point is time focused on gaining knowledge. And I left it deliberately vague because I think studying for me it's got to have a time element and there's got to be a knowledge element. And I'm going to say knowledge is different from understanding. And I just want to leave it at that because understanding, I think, is one of the future words that we're going to do. Yes, so I'm just going to say knowledge and understanding to me are different things.
Yeah.
So studying is time focused on gaining knowledge.
That's interesting.
And now that I've said that, I'm going to change gaining because it's not always gaining knowledge because it could be removing knowledge. It could be forgetting information because it could be forgetting redundant information. So time focused on what word would I put in there? I would put studying, but that's the word I'm trying to explain. Studying knowledge. Gaining or removing.
So my first word is kind of an act of discovery, exploring and finding new information. Now, I do want to change new information to not necessarily new information, more finding information, like learning, basically, is what I kept wanting to say the entire flipping time, but couldn't because... that's another word.
So do you think learning and studying are the same sorts of thing?
We can't touch on this too much because that is actually a word we have.
Yeah. Wait, do you think they're the same?
No. I think studying is like the action of learning, if that makes sense. Even though they're both action. It's like studying something leads to learning something in my head.
Interesting. So do you have that as a linear process? Studying
no.
equals learning? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Not.
I was going to say, I just want to like get that clear. Okay.
It's not that.
Okay. So.
It's an act of discovery. I think that's the main point that I'm trying to make. It's an act of discovery. It's discovering, exploring information.
Yeah, I was going to say that's very similar to
mine. I'm actually going to take out like new information. It's an act of discovering, exploring, and finding information.
Mm. Yeah, that's similar to my point, except my point's obviously got time in there as a metric. So, but yeah, same sort of point. Nice.
I know, that's why I was like, oh, this is cool. This is cool.
Right, second point. Let's see if we can get two or two. I've got deliberate conscious choice to focus on learning something. Now, I put learning something in there because studying involves learning. Like, I don't think you can study without learning. Mm. Learning being forwards or backwards, like I was talking earlier with qualifications. And I put deliberate conscious choice because I don't think we can study without thinking about it. I think we can learn without thinking about it, but I don't think we can study without deliberately thinking about it.
Yeah, I think one of my points here is, once again, I'm changing it as I'm talking about it, not because of what you said, but because of my own thing of like, it's like the act of collecting information with an idea to transform it into something else, which is kind of crossing over into learning. But when I study something, I'm studying for a purpose, kind of what you're saying there is like, I want to get information so that I can do something with it.
Yeah.
Like the act of studying is collecting that. It's like, oh, look, piece of candy, piece of candy. And it's like bringing it all together.
Candy.
Yeah. It was a Family Guy reference.
I know, but still, candy. Sweets.
Yeah.
Sweets.
They are sweet. I love studying because you study something, you're like, oh, this is fascinating. I love that. It is very sweet. I find it sweet.
So what, not going into the words too much, but what's the difference for you between studying and researching?
Studying is, I think researching is more deliberate, slightly more deliberate. I am researching a certain thing. I see studying as kind of a general, slightly less specific.
Now that's interesting. I am like the complete opposite. For me, I would say studying has a more deliberate outcome. There is an outcome you would expect. So you're not necessarily studying for a goal, but traditional studying for an essay is I'm going to regurgitate this piece of information. Whereas research, you could end at a point where, okay, human knowledge hasn't gone this far.
I think like to clarify my point on this needs to be a word as well, by the way. Like researching is, I research a specific topic. I study a general idea.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's how I define it best. It's like I research a specific topic. I study a general idea. My study often leads into research because I find something that I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. Let me dive into it. Then I kind of transition. It's non-linear, but the best way to explain it is linearly.
Yeah.
Linearly? Linearly.
Yeah.
Don't know that word. That's a horrible word. Yeah.
Yes, that's why you rephrase the sentence so you don't have to use it. That's how I write most of my essays and write in general. I'm like, I don't want to use that word, so I'm going to just rephrase the sentence.
Yeah, but then we have to...
I do that in my notes a lot so that the title of the note makes sense, which you may have noticed. Right, point three, revising knowledge for regurgitation in assessments. And I've put that in there because that is what, like I mentioned earlier, that is what traditional studying is. When you look at study, it's related normally to flashcards or to questions or mock exam papers and things like that. So I think studying doesn't necessarily need to have an element of regurgitation of knowledge, but it certainly has to have an element of remembering something to do something else.
I absolutely dislike that with a vengeance. I think for me, it's although I know that's what the traditional way of doing things is, and you are correct, I don't like it, which is why it's not one of my points. Even though, like, if I'm being looking at reality, that's what it is. It shouldn't be like that, in my view. It's not okay, about...
Okay, I think we've got something slightly different. So for me, when it says revising knowledge, I have that like as a mental process, revising knowledge, looking back into memory and bringing that forwards. Not just flashcards. Flashcards was the example I used, but it's the process of going back into memory, long-term memory or working memory, depending on how long ago you learned the thing. And bringing that forwards and using it. So it's the cycle of going back into mind. Yes and no.
This is so fun because we're just like, sort of, kind of, maybe, no.
Yeah, it's sort of, because active recall means that you have remembered a thing and you're recalling it, whereas the revisiting knowledge or revising knowledge is looking at things that you have got in memory and potentially creating something new from that and bringing it forwards.
That I view that as the same thing. It's retrieval. It's knowledge retrieval.
But it's not retrieval if you haven't already learnt the thing. You're creating it yourself. So if you've got like one and two and that makes three, three isn't remembered. You're not actively recalling three. You're creating three from one and two.
But you use active recall of one and two to create three.
Yeah, which is why I said sort of, because you got part of active recall, but then you also have creation of knowledge, which is why it's revising and revisiting knowledge. So that's why I was like, sort of.
Yeah, and like for me, my other one of my point, I mean, I hadn't put them in order because your conversation sparked a point of mine. I think it's what we did last time. Yeah. It's an eagerness, like to study. When you study, it's an eagerness to learn. And yeah, that learn is annoying because I have to define that and I can't. Like an eagerness, it's something that you want to explore. It's an exploration. It's an eagerness to learn and to discover and to create.
I'm going to challenge that slightly because I love it. And say, okay, what about the students that are taking a subject at school that need to revise for a test? Would that still be studying?
No.
So what would that be?
Forced learning. Forced education.
But that's not studying.
No.
But we said it was a deliberate choice to learn some, or deliberate choice to...
You said it's a deliberate choice. That is the difference.
Well, yeah, and you agreed.
Yeah. But the thing is that the way I view studying is if someone is trying to study something and they're made to study, is it deliberate? Yeah, I suppose it is. They're forcing themselves to learn something, but they're not.
It's not a studying that they want to do. It's a studying that they feel they need to do. That's the way I see it.
Try telling some people that.
that's the way I see it. Like as the word, I try not to attach like a narrative to the word in like feelings, whether it's a good or bad thing. It's just, this is the thing. So I think studying the thing can be negative, which is where I think the other side of what your point is sort of lies, because we're both biased and we enjoy studying. We enjoy the act of studying. Some people don't enjoy the act of studying certain topics, certain areas. And that's how I look at it.
I think for me, I do attach the emotion to the word. And I think if it's forced study, it's interesting. It's fascinating. That is a lot to think about and unpack. Because honestly, if you're going, you have to have some, maybe I'll reword eagerness to willingness, being willing to learn. Yeah. Maybe that's a better.
That was the word I was getting at.
Yeah, I think willingness to learn and explore. Because if you're not willing to do it, you're not going to study. That's it. That's it. If you're not willing to do it, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and that's where like the willingness sort of coincides with the deliberate, like, I've got the motivation to do it, the drive, the willingness.
That is a word we need to play with.
Motivation. Oh god, yeah. add some points on for that one. Okay, point four that I've got is, it doesn't always lead to understanding.
Yes,
because we can study for 40, 50, 100 hours and not understand a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I have no other statements on that.
Just yes. Right. Yes. Point five then. You're probably going to say the same thing for this one as well. Not just in school.
Oh, fuck yeah. We're doing so well. We're not swearing. This could have been the one episode that wasn't explicit.
What is it? Almost like an hour and like 50 minutes in. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's not just in school. Goodness.
And that's something that I wish I had learned sooner. Same. And I wish the education system like actually taught us stuff. Like, I have learned more since I started adult education, i.e. university, than my entire youth education. Like, when I look back at school and study, I didn't study, I didn't learn, I just wrote what the teacher wrote on the board. Oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. Yeah. Okay, stay out of trouble. I'll just stick my hand up every once in a while in a lesson so that they think I'm paying attention. I just answer the easy question.
Yeah.
What's one? I'd one. Two. What's the rest of these questions? I've already answered one today. I don't have to put my hand up again.
Yeah, and I just... Yes. Yeah. I wish that schools spent more time helping them actually learn what they want to and focusing in on their actual things that they enjoy. And
I think it's helping them find things they enjoy, especially in the younger years of learning. Like... When you're younger, you're chewing random stuff, you're poking stuff, you're asking loads and loads and loads of questions. Everyone is curious when you're younger. As you go through school, your curiosity gets dampened. Don't ask too many questions. We need to get through this lesson. Stop interrupting the lesson. Stop doing that thing. It's annoying me or distracting that person. It's a learning environment. Build different learning environments for different learning needs.
Yeah. And as someone who has two children who have very differing needs for learning, it's hard to watch. Genuinely hard to see the shift in like asking less questions. It's like you have to unlearn education.
Relearn. It's relearning is a term used by Adam Grant.
Relearning education. And like being able to just it's a sad one.
Yeah, and a thing I think we're gonna slowly round this episode out on is special needs. Special needs as a term in school when I was at school was a term you're like, oh, you're special needs, that's a bad thing. I completely disagree with that now, like coming out of school and looking at it, it's a completely wrong term. I don't think we should be using it at all because everyone has special needs. Everyone has certain learning needs that others aren't creating an environment, so it's not special at all. It's just your personal needs, and that's individualized learning. My personal take.
Yeah, and I completely agree. And I spent a very long time feeling bad for learning in my way, like for discovering stuff my way. It was always not necessarily frowned upon, but just like, why are you bothering? You shouldn't bother doing this. I'm like, why? It's fascinating. And now, years later, I'm still finally realizing I can learn what I want and I don't have to learn things in a certain way and discover things in a certain way. I can figure it out myself, which is where my business stems from. Like, the message of my business is figure out how you work and then you can do what you want. Instead of having to follow a set structure, which you're taught to do, because that's how we're taught in education.
We could carry on and relative age effect has just come to my head, but I'm not going to go on that one. So we're going to close the episode out with here.
Thank you very much.
Bye, everyone.